At Care Heating and Cooling, we put you first. You are the reason we're open 7 days a week and why it's easy to schedule service at careheatingandcooling.com. Your safety is why we check every gas furnace for carbon monoxide. And it's because of you that our techs are paid to fix your furnace, not sell you a new one. So it's no surprise that last year, Care was awarded a BBB Torch Award for Ethics, because at Care, we're committed to doing business right. Call Care at 1-800-COOLING when you need a company you can trust.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
I spent $40,000 on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed. No, it hasn't.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to the Every Outfit podcast. Chelsea, how the hell are you? I truly have not seen you since we recorded last week. I'm going to assume that your week much more fun than my week.
I think it was probably more fun than your week, yes. I went to Miami, to South Beach, to celebrate my wife's 30th birthday and my 41st birthday. And we went there with a bunch of our friends. 11 of our friends flew in from various places. Tat's parents came from Greece, where they've been living. And yeah, we had fabulous dinners and hung out by the pool and turned up at the gay club, and we rented a boat on Tat's actual birthday, which was really fun.
I actually know this. I feel like I was one of the listeners over the weekend having a parasocial relationship with my own best friend, just watching what you were doing through Instagram stories.
Well, you were invited, and I'm pleased to report that, yeah, being on a boat, I've never done anything like that, but it was like the Mariah Carey Honey music video.
I'm trying to remember that music video. Weren't there spies? Didn't she have to like jump off the boat? There was a jet ski.
There was a jet ski. I did ride a jet ski, which also felt very Hunting Wives.
Now, I'm going to assume you weren't driving the jet ski. You were on the back of a jet ski.
Yeah, I'm not bold enough to drive. But yeah, it was really nice. It was really restorative. We stayed at this hotel called the Shelbourne, which is like an old Miami hotel that's recently undergone this crazy ass renovation. And you will never guess who was staying there.
Patricia Field?
No, that would be amazing. Danny Houston, brother of Angelica, and the villain in the new Naked Gun movie, which I loved and I just watched. I know you had seen, but we've never talked about it.
Yes. The amount of money that I have spent on rentals through Apple TV, it must be in the hundreds at this point. But it's bad for theatrical films, but great for people who've just had babies, that movies are within weeks available to watch digitally.
Yeah, I loved it. I really loved it. I wish I had seen it in a theater. I would have loved to see it with an audience.
Well, that's the other problem. If you don't see it in 2 weeks, then you must rent it digitally.
True. Did you ever watch the original ones with Leslie Nielsen?
That feels like one of those Comedy Central was always on in the background growing up.
See, I loved all of those films. There were three of them. And I especially liked the third movie, Naked Gun 33 and a Third. Because it was like about a terrorist attack or a bomb or something that was going to go off at the Oscars. And that's the one that has Anna Nicole Smith in it.
Right, right. And Priscilla Presley is in those movies as well.
Yes, Priscilla Presley. Pamela Anderson took on the Priscilla Presley role in this new version with Liam Neeson.
She has great comedic timing.
She does. The scene where she's scatting is so good. I honestly, I don't think I've laughed this hard in a really long time. And the jokes, like the original, they come in such fast succession that you almost even don't have time to process everything.
The thing that I was laughing about days later is the bit where, and it's in the trailer, where there's body cam footage of Liam Neeson eating a hot dog repeatedly and having to have an emergency bathroom event every time he has a hot dog. And then when it's revealed during an interrogation with Busta Rhymes, he's just in a corner and he goes, I had five more that day.
Liam Neeson is very good at doing deadpan comedy, and I loved him in this.
But I don't think that there's going to be a sequel for the film.
I don't know. It seems to be popular, no?
I know. Also, when the film was coming out, it was reported that Pamela Anderson and Liam Neeson were dating, which warmed the hearts of many of us. But it's recently come out that maybe that was just a PR relationship to promote the film. And that is at once genius, but also breaks my heart a little bit.
Yeah, you would think that they would be above that.
They definitely smashed, though.
I hope they did. Anyway, how have you been?
I do want to clarify, Paul and I, whose birthday also happened on the 13th.
Oh, right.
His birthday's not going to matter till his 40th. I think that's what we, since all of you are born either on the same day or within a day of each other. Last year it was your birthday. This year it's Tat's birthday. And then, yeah, Paul doesn't really have, sadly, a significant birthday until his 40th.
It's also Fiona Apple's birthday, our queen.
That's true. All of you neurodivergos in my life. To be fair, we were invited to Miami. It seemed a little premature to leave a three-month-old back in Los Angeles and go and party. And also, it really didn't feel like the vibe to bring an infant to Miami. I didn't want to do that to Tatiana.
I think it could have worked, but yes, for your own sanity and ease, probably best that you stayed home. Although, I love Miami so much, I could move there. We had the best time when we went a couple years ago, and I just think that they're doing everything right. They eat dinner late. They actually look good, like they pull full looks. People think that people dress up in LA, but really LA is full of people in aloe sets that look like shit.
Oh, absolutely. It's athleisure at all times.
These people wear like head-to-toe Cavalli unironically and look incredible.
Just say the word, Chelsea. Like, my grandparents had a house in Boca Raton. Like, I have spent a good portion of my life in South Florida. I am ready to start an Every Outfit outpost in Florida.
Yeah, we just need a mansion on South Beach like Gianni Versace. I actually went back to that restaurant just because Tat had never been there. Gianni's, the restaurant in the former Versace mansion, which is kind of like the Craigs or the Catch of South Beach in terms of the crowd. But
well, it's also not sanctioned by the Versace family, and they very much do not like the existence that Gianni Versace's home has been turned into a hotel slash tourist restaurant.
Yeah, the crowd is really, really cheesy. And it was even cheesier when we went because there was a one-year-old's birthday party. And at one point, I was eating dinner and like a house remix of Baby Shark played in the entire restaurant. And it was all like one-year-olds wearing like Gucci t-shirts. Like it was like the most dripped out toddlers I've ever seen in my life. And like just crazy chicks with BBLs, and like it's wild there. Every man kind of looks like DJ Khaled.
Well, you're giving me an idea, Chelsea. I completely glossed over the next most significant birthday would be Morty's first birthday. Do we fly to Miami? I'd fly to Miami with a one-year-old and go balls to the wall at the Versace restaurant or Gianni's. They can't actually use Versace, but you know. They can say Johnny's.
Well, and now there's another restaurant called Donatella's. I don't remember if we talked about this on the pod or if we talked about it together. But yes, yet another person is making a Versace-themed restaurant.
But is it on-site there?
No, it's not on-site there. But the fucked up thing is that this restaurant came to be because Donatella sold the Versace mansion for, I forget how much it was. It was either like $18 million or $20 million in the year 2000. Then someone else bought it in like 2013 for $40 million. And then it became the restaurant and the hotel and what it is now. But it's kind of insane because it's like, why did they not just keep this in the family? Why is this not a Versace flagship store? I get it. It's fucked up. He was murdered there, but it's also a historical site.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because that's kind of the story behind David Lynch's estate or compound has recently come up for sale. I believe it's $11 or $15 million in
15, and honestly a bargain.
Because it's three homes. I've talked about this before, but I used to live a couple doors down from the David Lynch compound. I once, while I was walking my dog, looked up and saw him in the window. But I saw this comment from his eldest daughter, Jennifer Lynch, because you would wonder why not just keep this architecturally significant and highly specific property in the family. And I don't know where this comment came from. It was clearly on Instagram. It must have been commenting on a post about the house being for sale, but she said that they would have loved to keep it in the family, but it was in her father's will very clearly that the house or the houses were to be sold and the profits were to be split amongst all of the children. So that's why they're doing this.
That's insane, though. Sell one of them. The Frank Lloyd Wright one, the pink house, when I lived with you, would walk by this house all the time, hoping to catch a glimpse, but also just to stare at it and worship it and imagine what the inside was like. It is more fabulous than I could have imagined, especially the pool for that house.
So asterisk, yes, David Lynch lived in what's called the Beverly Johnson House, designed by Frank Lloyd Wright's son, Lloyd Wright.
Ah, thank you for the clarification. I'm spreading misinformation about the David Lynch house.
And that pool house was built in 1991, and that was built by Lloyd Wright's son, Eric Lloyd Wright. So Frank Lloyd Wright's grandson designed the pool house in the style of his father.
Look at this worthwhile Nepo baby.
And I looked at the Wikipedia for Eric Lloyd Wright. He is an architect in his own right. He's designed some really cool homes in Silver Lake, but a lot of his work has been restoring his grandfather's homes, which is kind of crazy. Like, your lineage is just fixing your grandfather's sordid work.
Who better?
So that's one house. And then there's a house next door that seemed to be his production company editing suite. And then the house next to that, for those who've seen the movie Lost Highway, that was the exterior of Bill Pullman's house in Lost Highway. That is where I saw David Lynch in the window one time. And I believe that's where his artist studio was, if you ever watched that documentary about David Lynch.
That is truly the craziest looking building. Like, I've never seen a house like that that is a private residence and not a cultural institution. And it's sad that it isn't going to become a museum about David Lynch, although there would be no place for people to park. That's the problem. Like, it should be a museum, but where are those people going? Those streets could only accommodate like 20 cars max at any given time.
Who are you? Me? Talking about the lack of parking? Yeah, it should be treated like the stall house where you have to get on a tour van to even get up to the property because there's just no parking.
Do you think we could find a way to tour these houses? Like, do you know a realtor that might hook us up just for shits and giggles?
Friend of the show, Kayla's a realtor now.
Oh, yeah. Kayla, come through. We will never buy these houses, but we deserve to set foot inside them.
Yeah, I did notice no open house available for the David Lynch compound, understandably so. I'm going to assume that you didn't win the $1 billion lottery.
No, unfortunately.
So I guess there goes our chance of buying the David Lynch compound and keeping it preserved. I don't know. Hopefully some billionaire will buy it and keep it up. Those are not really homes you would destroy. And the property is so unforgiving. It's not like you would develop a McMansion on it. So
no.
Say goodbye to sticky notes and calendar confusion with Skylight. The Skylight calendar is here to keep your family organized. This beautifully designed digital display syncs with your existing calendars, making it effortless to track events, appointments, and reminders in one easy-to-see place. The other day, Paul was pacing around the house, and I asked him what he was doing. He replied he was trying to write a to-do list that wasn't written on 8 different sticky notes and instead was all in one place. I pointed to our Skylight calendar and said, "Put your to-do list in there." With the free Skylight Companion app, you can add or update events, lists, and more on the go. With Skylight Calendar, you'll be able to manage events, chores, and grocery lists while assigning colors for each of your family members, thus eliminating any excuse of someone not knowing what they needed to do and when. Having an all-in-one smart calendar that can seamlessly sync with Google Calendar, Apple Calendar, and Outlook has been a lifesaver and honestly has done wonders for our marriage. Your happiness is Skylight's happiness, so if in 120 days you are not 100% thrilled with your purchase, you can return it for a full refund, no questions asked. Right now, Skylight is offering our listeners $30 off their 15-inch calendars by going to myskylight.com/outfit. Go to myskylight.com/outfit for $30 off your 15-inch calendar. That is myskylight.com/outfit.
Anyway, I think we have something kind of depressing to talk about, unfortunately.
Yeah, you did ask how I was, and like between what has gone on in the world the past week, or specifically the United States, and the fact that my child is going through the 4-month sleep regression and I haven't experienced a REM cycle in 2 weeks, like I am the glamorous woman having a nervous breakdown right now.
Yeah, you're hanging on by a thread, but you look great. I would never know based on looking at you.
Thank you.
It's not even giving like Miranda in that one episode where she was really overwhelmed with having a baby.
Yeah, I didn't want it to feel like that episode where I look super haggard or Miranda's super haggard and you are the Samantha talking about your John Mandy salon appointment. But yeah, spooky times we're living in.
Yeah, we're of course referring to Jimmy Kimmel's, wait, what show was that? It's like the late show,
Jimmy Kimmel Live,
right, that's what it's called. Not that I watched it.
Not that any of us watched it, but that's not the point. He was pulled off air for his comments made in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's assassination. And I've seen people be like, I canceled my Disney Plus subscription. I canceled my Hulu subscription. That'll teach him. And I don't think that's the problem, because while ABC made the decision to pull him off the air indefinitely, so he hasn't been canceled, but it doesn't seem like his show will be happening anytime soon, it's because the owners of the television stations that air his show said that they're just not going to put it on air. So like, what choice did ABC have?
It's so crazy, because what he said was more dragging MAGA Republicans for using Charlie Kirk's death for political gain and making fun of Trump and his new ballroom that he's adding to the White House. Like, it really was not that bad.
But they were waiting for him to say anything. I mean, that's what this is really about.
And to be honest, it really scares me. It kept me up last night, actually, because sometimes I have insomnia and I can't sleep and I have racing thoughts about like everything bad that could happen in my life / the world. And it's distressing.
This is so bad. I mean, you and I were texting about this last night, and we're 9 months in. There are 3 more years to go, and this is where we're at. Like, it does feel like, because these networks and media organizations are capitulating to Trump, again, not even a year into his presidency, it really feels like by the end of it, he's just going to call ABC and be like, tell me my hair looks nice today.
It's also so annoying because MAGA people are always complaining about how their freedom of speech is being taken away from them just because they want to say slurs on the internet without anyone coming for them.
On the way here, I was listening to a piece from the outlet Semaphore, I think that's what it's called. And the person was talking about how the person had interviewed Brandon Carr. So we should say that Brandon Carr, the FCC chair, we talked about him a few weeks ago when we were talking about the Paramount merger. One of the big things that pushed this Jimmy Kimmel getting yanked off air is the fact that Nexstar Media Group, which is the largest owner of local television stations in the United States, they're in the middle of a $6.2 billion merger with a media company called Tegna, and they are seeking to own about 65 more television stations, and they need Brandon Carr's approval. So that's sort of the downward reasoning that this happened, and ABC really really had no choice. And as I was driving in also, I guess Rolling Stone just published a story that ABC executives did not think that what Jimmy Kimmel said was that bad. They just feared retaliation from Trump.
It's so scary. And I haven't fact checked this, but I saw people on the internet talking about the fact that on the episode of The View today, they didn't talk about this, which indicates that they weren't allowed to talk about this.
I saw this too, and I can't fact check it either. I meant to ask you.
I didn't have time to watch The View today. Sorry, babes.
Spooky, spooky times.
It really is.
It feels like a good time to be a subscriber-based independent media organization.
Yes, but we're still reliant on so many corporations is the scary thing.
That is very true. And ultimately, Jimmy Kimmel will be fine. He makes $15 million a year. The other large conglomerate that owns a bunch of television stations is Sinclair, and they have gone as far as, we will only allow Jimmy Kimmel back on air if he apologizes publicly and donates to Charlie Kirk's organization, Turning Point.
He barely said anything bad about Charlie Kirk. It's so crazy.
I believe it's either the night it happened or the day afterwards. He said this was horrible, and, you know, my thoughts and prayers for his family.
Ugh.
Anyway, shall we get into the Emmys?
Yes. Okay, first of all, I've been wondering this all week. Who the fuck hosted the Emmys?
It's a man named Nate Bargatze. He is a comedian. He's not on our radar, but evidently last year he was the highest grossing comedian. The best way I could describe him for you, Chelsea, is he's like a comedian for unproblematic suburban dads that enjoy spending their weekends at breweries and, you know, want to tell you about their craft whiskey selection at their home bar.
Okay. Respect to those kings.
I feel like we say this every award show, but like, you have to let a woman, a gay man, or Conan O'Brien host.
Yeah, like, has this man actually ever watched an award show before?
Does this man watch TV?
It was really bad, and there was basically one joke for the entire night, which was this countdown clock thing that they did to try and get the winners to have short speeches.
Okay, I want to discuss this, because this happens every award show. There is some sort of gimmick of how to make the show not run long. And I have to say, this is maybe the most convoluted of any award show gimmick to keep the speeches short.
Yeah, and the sad thing is that it really, really impacted the speeches, especially in the first half of the show. People just got up there, grabbed their award, and ran off stage, basically.
So for those who did not watch the Emmys, it started with $100,000 being dedicated to the Boys and Girls Club. And Nate Bargatze said that for every second a winner went over their allotted time, which was 45 seconds, $1,000 would be deducted. However, if anyone went under 45 seconds, $1,000 would be added. Very confusing math.
Funny the first time, not funny the 20th time.
I think I've talked about this before, but when Conan hosted the Emmys, I think back in 2002, his bit was that he locked Bob Newhart in like a hyperbaric chamber that was on stage, and he only had enough oxygen for 3 hours.
That was cute.
Yeah, that was funny. I think it was either the Emmys one year or maybe it was even the Oscars where whoever did the shortest speech won a jet ski. But daring actors to give a short speech where it's like, this might be the only time that I will ever be on stage winning an award. Like, I could give a shit. Like, I'll donate $40,000 to the Boys and Girls Club. And at the end of the show, I saw, because I went out to dinner for Paul's birthday when the Emmys were going on. But when I came back, I saw at the end of the Emmys, he was like, well, this went so badly that like CBS is going to match the donation. And then I'm going to add, I think it was $100,000. So it ended up being $300,000. But like so many people had done long speeches that like actually it was a pathetic amount that was going to be donated to the Boys and Girls Club. So like the bit didn't really work.
Well, there were no real stakes to it.
Of course not.
However, I will say there were a lot of moments at the Emmys that I really, really loved. First of all, the country western tribute to Golden Girls. It was Reba McEntire, the blonde chick from Little Big Town, and some woman named Karen Fairchild, who I'm completely unfamiliar with. But they sang the theme in like a replica of the Golden Girls house. And I thought it was so cute. And I love how the audience got into it, or at the very least, Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell just seems to be a great vibe wherever he goes. He's promoting some movie with Margot Robbie that I will not be seeing, but I saw him cursing on the Today Show and it was very cute.
I also loved seeing the Gilmore Girls reunion. I didn't watch that show religiously. I haven't seen every episode, but I've seen enough episodes to understand that it is a show of quality. And it was cute seeing them back together again. Also, back in the day, when I was an intern at the Chanel PR department in New York, Alexis Bledel came in to be dressed for an event of some sort. And I got to pick her clothes and she was so nice to me. So
there you go.
I always love Rory Gilmore for that reason.
I would love to know your opinion about another cast reunion, which was the SVU reunion.
Well, it wasn't just SVU. More broadly, it was a Law and Order reunion, although it was mostly SVU people because it was Mariska Hargitay, Ice-T, Christopher Maloney. Then it was S. Apatha Murkerson, who was on the original Law and Order. And then it was Tony Goldwyn, brother of our fave Liz Goldwyn, who was on a few episodes of Criminal Intent, but is now on the like rebooted Law and Order.
Yes, he was on Law and Order Criminal Intent playing Vincent D'Onofrio's brother, but he is playing a completely different character. He is not Vincent D'Onofrio's brother from Criminal Intent, who's now a DA on regular Law and Order. He is a completely separate human being.
See, I know this is bad, but I've like never watched Law and Order. I've watched Criminal Intent, but never the original series, which is nuts.
Do you think it's time to jump in for this reboot?
I'm down to watch the reboot, but I also feel like I should just watch the original show. But yeah, there's so many amazing people that have been on all of those shows, but being an SVU fan, I obviously wanted to see Tamara Tooney and Beatie Wong because they've been on that show for 10,000 years, just like everyone else.
Yeah, the selection was a little random. But I think anytime Mariska Hargitay and Chris Maloney are together, it makes people very excited.
It needed to be a reunion of the original Law & Order cast or SVU.
I was just making sure that Sam Waterston is still alive. Like,
I will say, when the curtain pulled up and they revealed Mariska in the sequin gown, I screamed like a Jonas Brothers fan.
Okay, yeah. The one that's dead from Law & Order, sorry, I'm also looking this up, is Jerry Orbach. Do you remember there was those ads in the subway where it was like, I'm Jerry Orbach and I donated my eyes when I died?
Wait, no, but that sounds major.
Okay, I'm just making sure that I didn't completely make this up.
I hope you did. I hope your mind is that dark and fucked up.
Can I just say one more thing about sleep deprivation and having a newborn? This has happened to Paul as well, and this is truly something out of a horror film. You hear phantom cries, Chelsea. Don't.
I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't do anything.
I know you've heard me talk about Nutrafol for years and thought, that's great for you, Lauren, but does it really work? There are so many hair growth products on the market, it's hard to know who's the real deal. But I'm here to say Nutrafol isn't like the rest of them, because Nutrafol is physician-formulated, clinically tested, and dermatologist-recommended. That's probably why Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, trusted by over 1.5 million people. You can feel great about what you're putting into your body since Nutrafol hair growth supplements are backed by peer reviewed studies. I have used their women's formula in the past to deal with some hair shedding issues that I had, and I'm currently using their postpartum formula, which targets key root causes of postpartum thinning, physical and emotional stress. I'm certainly under that. Hormonal changes, yep, and nutrient depletion. So that with consistent daily use, I'll start to see thicker, fuller hair and less overall shedding. And honestly, that's all I'm asking for. See thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code OUTFIT. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code OUTFIT. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code OUTFIT.
Who are some notable winners?
My favorite win of the night was in the best supporting actor in a comedy category. Jeff Hiller from Somebody Somewhere one. And I just watched three seasons of that show this month. I'd never seen it before. And his performance is truly astounding. It's so funny. It's so human. It is such important representation of a genre of person that I've never seen depicted on television, which is a gay man who lives in a small town, who isn't particularly fancy, but who is very culturally literate and also very involved in his local church. Like, I know this man.
Yeah, it's so great that this show is finally getting its due, except for the fact that they canceled it.
I know, it's so sad. And these seasons were very short. Like, it's a half an hour show. I think there's 7 or 8 episodes per season. So you can really blow through this in a few days, as I did. But yeah, if you liked the friendship component of Sex and the City, watch this show, because it is about, it stars Bridget Everett, and she plays this straight, chronically single woman who lives in the Midwest, who is feeling lost and lonely in midlife. And she meets this group of sort of like gay and trans misfits, and is very much a show about chosen family. And the thesis really is our friends are our soulmates. And she's incredible as well, and got totally snubbed at the Emmys. But I'm glad at least Jeff Hiller got recognized for his incredible work.
Before we talk about the winners, I did find the ad. Do you not remember this ad in the subways? Jerry Orbach gave his heart and soul to acting and the gift of sight to two New Yorkers, and it was promoting the Eye Bank of New York.
What a real one. He truly gave us so much. So yeah, everyone, please watch Somebody Somewhere. It's on our beloved HBO Max. It's so good. And actually, a couple years ago, I was driving down the Sunset Strip, and there was a billboard for Somebody Somewhere, like above the Chateau Marmont. And I saw that Bridget Everett was like on the street taking a photo in front of it. So I rolled down the window and I screamed like, Bridget, I fucking love you. And she turned around and waved. And I'm glad that I was able to show her some love during such an iconic moment in her career. Also, for anyone that needs context, this is the woman that played the drunk bitch that Carrie Bradshaw interviewed at Starbucks before she found Louise to be her assistant.
Should have hired her.
What else?
I think the most viral speech of the evening would be Hannah Einbinder, where she declared, go birds, fuck ICE, and free Palestine, which I really commend Hannah Einbinder for speaking so bravely about her love of the Philadelphia Eagles.
I was like, go birds? What is this bitch talking about?
Well, I'm pretty sure she was raised in Los Angeles. I'm like, how are you a Philadelphia Eagles fan? Your mother created the Groundlings.
Right. That is bizarre. This was her first win, whereas Jean Smart, this was her fourth win for playing the iconic character of Deborah Vance. This is now becoming a Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Candace Bergen type situation where I think she is just going to win for as long as this show is on the air. But Hannah Einbinder, it takes two to tango. She deserved this for sure, especially for the last season.
I think her delivery of the word bronzino during her epic meltdown last season is what won it for her.
The meltdown was great, but also she did some great dramatic work. You really felt the pain that her character felt for being slighted and betrayed by Deborah in this past season.
Jimmy Kimmel was in the last season of Hacks. And I mean, the ending of Hacks is a sort of similar standing on principle and not bowing to corporate overlords for one's late night show. Another speech I found funny was the kid from Adolescence who won.
Ugh, so charming.
So charming, but also so precocious, because at one point, wasn't he like, don't give up on your dreams. Look at where I was just a few years ago. I was a nobody. It's like, buddy, you were 12.
It's like, buddy, you're 5 years old and you just won an Emmy. But I'm so glad that Adolescence won, but there was kind of no other option, right? Because you look at every category where Adolescence was nominated, and as good as some of the other performances and the other shows were, what could you do to compete with that, really? It was just so brilliant and so smart and so affecting to everyone that watched that show. It was really nice to see him win and the dad win. Also, Ted Danson, Mary Steenburgen winning the Humanitarian Award.
Yeah, who knew there was a Bob Hope Humanitarian Award associated with the Emmys? I don't seem to remember this in previous years. Do you?
I don't remember it either, although surely Jane Fonda must have received it already. They are such real ones. I've seen both of them at protests over the years, although I couldn't really focus on any of their humanitarian work because when I see Ted Danson, a 77-year-old man, I'm struck by his beauty and his elegance. I know I've said this before, but I really think that this man is like just the ideal kind of for men. And I don't understand why the fashion has put Jeff Goldblum on a pedestal and Kyle MacLachlan on a pedestal, but not Ted Danson, because I feel like he is on par with both of them, if not more fab.
You're asking, where is Ted Danson's Prada campaign?
Yeah, Prada, Saint Laurent could also work for Ted Danson.
Ooh, I could see him in a moody black and white pictorial.
They love a man of a certain age with white hair, plus the thinness of Ted Danson. it's just so dramatic looking to have a suit tailored to that tall, thin, perfect body.
I really can't understand if, like Tom Selleck, like you want to fuck Ted Danson or you want to be Ted Danson.
No, I really do think it's like these are just beauty ideals, I think, that I have for men and for Ted Danson, for men aging specifically. Not that Tom Selleck isn't still hot. Steve Guttenberg, I'm not hitting that. I don't care.
We applaud his efforts during the Palisades fire, but...
We do.
Do you know this about Mary Steenburgen, that she had brain surgery and it rewired her brain that she can now write songs? And she's been an uncredited songwriter on like a bunch of award-winning songs or something.
That's amazing. I hope she collabs with Rita Wilson at some point in the near future.
I know that you dipped out of the studio, but I was excited to see how many awards it won. Although it does feel inevitable when you do a show about Hollywood. Hollywood, of course, can't help but award you.
No, I need to continue with the studio. I do. I had my criticisms, but I also see what's good about it. And I can see myself getting into it. And, you know, Catherine O'Hara, obviously genius.
Catherine O'Hara, I think we talked about this when we talked about the studio. In my mind, the second time she's playing a version of Amy Pascal, because yeah, when she was on Six Feet Under, yeah, she's very clearly a version of former Sony studio head Amy Pascal.
Shall we get into some of the fashion?
Sure.
So who were your best dressed?
I really love Jenna Ortega in Givenchy. I think she's coming off of a promotional run for the new season of Wednesday, which I heard all of you guys, I will give it a watch. But I think the work she's been doing with her stylist, Enrique Melendez, has been incredible. This sort of goth persona that feels like it's been invented out of thin air, but I dig it. Anyone that wants to adopt a goth fashion persona, especially a celebrity, I'm here for it.
Well, it makes sense that she's doing it for Wednesday. I think that this piece, the top that she wears, I think is the standout piece from that Sarah Burton Givenchy collection. Although I feel like her glam was like really fucked, or just maybe a little extreme for the Emmys, maybe a little more VMAs.
It's definitely in line with the glam that she's been doing. I would say a Gabriette style of glam.
But see, you can't apply like a Gabriette style of glam to just like anyone, any person.
And especially for the Emmys. Like Emmys is a very mass suburban award show.
Okay, who else did you like?
Anytime Colman Domingo is anywhere on the red carpet, especially when he's wearing Valentino, I think he is the perfect muse for Alessandro Michele's vision. He was in a pale blue checkered jacket with what looked to be like fringe crystal embellishments. He had a polka dot mandarin collar shirt and brown trousers. Brown was big. Blue and brown were big for men on the red carpet, although I didn't love Seth Rogen's brown suit.
Well, there's nothing better than the combination of like a light sky blue and a chocolate brown, which I don't know what Prada collection in the early 90s introduced that to me, but it was very influential to me as a eighth grade Wet Seal shopper. I'll tell you that.
Who were your faves?
My favorites, Chloe Sevigny, obviously, in YSL. great gown, great jewelry. She's never looked bad at an award show in her life. I also really loved John Grease in a beige Jacquemus suit that didn't have a lapel. It felt very Armani-esque. And I feel like that was a nice level of formality for the Emmys. Because it's not the Oscars, you know what I mean? We don't need to go crazy.
No, we don't need to go white tux.
Loved Owen Cooper, the kid from Adolescence, in Gap. Yes, Gap fully copied Prada, who I first assumed made this look. And I hope they actually manufacture that jacket, because I think that your average Joe could wear it and look really fab.
I think they will. They've been doing a lot of smart stuff. I would assume that that would come through their Gap Studio collection, which a lot of the stuff you're seeing on the red carpet, if it's Gap, is through Gap Studio.
Also, maybe the best dressed of all, Gwendolyn Christie in Tom Ford by Hayter Ackerman. I'm giving this woman the Diane Keaton Award for white pantsuit excellence. But again, I think this is the correct level of formality. I think that it still to this day is subversive to be a woman that wears a suit to an award show instead of a big poofy gown. I think that she looked chic and perfect. And if I went to the Emmys, I would like to hope I looked even a little bit like her. I'd be trying to look like her.
Now, she looked great in a white tux, but you know who's on my worst dressed wearing a white tux is Pedro Pascal in Celine.
Okay, he didn't look bad, though. Maybe it's, like, boring.
There was something off in the proportions, and I can't figure it out, because the shoulders are exaggerated, which would be fine, and the waist is very, like, close to his body. I don't know. There's something off. Like, the pants are a little too short, or maybe it's the white shoes he's wearing. There's something off about this.
It's interesting because he's recently left the stylist that he's had recently, the one that was like quite cool and putting him in all of these very high fashion, often controversial looks. And now he's got away from that and is dressing like this.
Not good. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I don't think it's good either. He's so hot, he can wear anything, but like, I don't think this did a lot, certainly.
What about you? Who were your worst dressed?
I hate to say this, but Christopher Maloney.
I was biting my tongue because I know how you feel about him. But yes, let's discuss the suit.
John Varvatos did him dirty.
Well, John Varvatos is a plague on men of a certain age that want to look, quote unquote, cool.
Yeah, it was some sort of like nightmare jacquard, I think. It was navy blue. The tailoring was really outdated. The leg was really skinny. And he's like a big, muscly guy. It looks like something that The Rock would have worn like 10 years ago. And I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but like it made him look gay.
No, this is what I was going to say. There is something about super jacked men. They love to dress like this. The Oppenheim brothers dress like this. It is like too tight, overly patterned. Like, if anyone should be rocking a blousy pant and a button down that has several buttons undone, it's Christopher Maloney.
I know. And it's not even that I don't want him to look gay, but this isn't gay in a cool, like, Interview magazine photographed me in a crop top way.
Right.
This is gay in, like, a sad way.
I did send you. Christopher Maloney recently did a tour of his home in New York for Architectural Digest, and I feel like,
oh fuck, I forgot to watch it.
The home is a reflection, Chelsea, of his style. It is maximalist, not in a good way. There are a lot of clear sliding doors. It's confused.
Well, a lot of straight men shouldn't decorate. Lenny Kravitz, Walton Goggins, sure, let them do their thing, but Christopher Maloney, I don't know. I'd be a little scared to see the house if this is how he's dressing at the Emmys. But that said, it's like he looked so hot. Like his face, his body, his vibe, like incredible.
Sorry, does Christopher Maloney go above Tom Selleck in your hall pass?
You know what? We need to do the Every Outfit Sexiest Men Alive special. Once okay. We have the studio, okay, we'll each pick like five guys that okay. We think are really hot,
yeah,
and we'll justify our choices.
Okay. Caveat. I think you should only pick straight men and I should only pick gay men.
Deal. Once again, today's episode is sponsored by The Real Real, which is the best place to shop for authenticated luxury bags, clothing, jewelry, and so much more. This is such a pleasure for me because I love The Real Real, and I will talk about it to truly anyone who will listen.
It's really true, guys. Chelsea loves nothing more than to indoctrinate someone new to The Real Real. She did it to me, and I am eternally grateful, and she's going to do it to you guys.
And I am here to help. If you are new to The Real Real, I have a suggestion. Start by downloading the app. This is my favorite way to use the website. Then you're going to input your size, so the only clothes that you are seeing are pieces that you can actually fit into. And then you are going to search for designers that you like, or perhaps a specific item of clothing that you're looking for. For example, before my trip to Miami, I was like, I need a pair of white leather mules with a low heel that I can actually walk in. So I searched The Real Real for that. I favorited like 5 different pairs, and I ultimately found these really fab Balenciaga mules that were 60% off, never been worn before. So good. But I want to know, what have you been buying from The Real Real?
Well, I'm very excited to say I have purchased my first Izzy Miyake Pleats Please piece from The Real Real, because you cannot find any Pleats Please stuff, even on e-stores or retail. It's impossible to find.
They do have a beautiful store in New York, but yes, we do not have one here. I'm curious, what did you get?
I got this. I've had my eye on getting a mock neck long sleeve Pleats Please piece, and I found one in a beautiful steel gray, 60% off the retail price in my size. It is on its way to me right now.
Well, I cannot wait to see it. Lauren, once again, can you do the outro?
Of course. The Real Real is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. With thousands of new arrivals daily, no one does resale like The Real Real. And now, get $25 off your first purchase when you go to therealreal.com/outfit. That's therealreal.com/outfit to get your $25 off. When you type in the URL, please make sure that it is lowercase. It will not work if it is uppercase. Start shopping now and make Chelsea proud at therealreal.com/outfit.
Oh yeah, who are your worst dressed?
I did not care for Sydney Sweeney and Oscar De La Renta. It was a red va-va-voom plunging sweetheart neckline.
It was just boring. Like, she looked beautiful, but it was like, we've seen it 1,000 times.
Also, to your point about the Emmys, like, there is something a little more mainstream of all the award shows. Like, you don't need to do a full look, but like, you also don't need to do this old school glamour for the Emmys.
Yeah, she could do something a little less formal, a little more modern, I think.
Well, isn't she the face of Miu Miu?
Yeah, true. Why are you wearing Oscar De La Renta? That's very much like, oh, I have a fridge of leftovers from Mr. Chow, but I'm just going to eat like a stale Cold Ranch Dorito chip.
Another person in an unfortunate sweetheart neckline, and I hate to say it, was Carrie Coon, who debuted a pixie haircut. She was wearing Chanel.
The hair was great.
The hair was great. It needed a cool minimalist like column dress or something, not a kind of the way that Chanel does their version of a 1950s prom dress is what it looked like.
Yeah, I don't think the T-length was good. Again, not to say that you have to dress super formally for the Emmys, but I think it just didn't feel modern, whereas the hair felt quite modern. And the hair was like, there's nothing better than a new haircut reveal on the red carpet. And I feel like this could have had a lot more impact. Like, if she was dressed like Gwendolyn Christie, it would have been all over. We would have been like, oh, this bitch is the new Tilda Swinton.
Do you want to talk about Megan Staltler? Am I now saying her last name correctly?
I honestly don't know.
It's not Meg Statler. It's Stalter.
Well, it's funny because I don't think she was the worst dressed, but she was going for worst dressed as a strategy. And she wore a white T-shirt and jeans and a very practical looking black tote bag that had ceasefire written on it on a piece of tape. Honestly, if Joan Rivers had lived to see this, it would have killed her.
I don't know. I think Joan would have gotten the joke. I mean, it is a bit that she's dressing very casually for an award show.
Oh, for sure. When someone asks her, who are you wearing? And you're saying Hanes and Levi's, that's objectively hilarious. But this look is also saying, because of the ceasefire thing, that it's like, we have bigger issues to focus on right now than celebrities wearing these extravagant gowns. But at the same time, because she was so casual, it was also a bit that she was doing for comedic effect. So there's a bit of a contradiction there.
And I think if you asked her, she would want to be on the worst dress list.
Yeah, for sure. I love her. She certainly made the red carpet a lot more exciting.
So is that all we have to say about the Emmys?
I think so.
Before we get into New York Fashion Week, can I tell you about some TikTok fashion drama that's going on?
Sure.
So there is an influencer named Wisdom K. He's a model as well as a fashion influencer. He has a huge following on social media. He has 7.6 million TikTok followers.
Okay, but was he a model first? Like, is he a very successful model, or is he more like...
He got an IMG contract after...
Yes, exactly.
I do not know. He started to appear on my For You page with these videos where it's like, I was gone for a week and look at all the stuff that I ordered. I should say he is an unrepentant shopaholic. And I assume because of his popularity, he's got the money to back up this shopping habit. I was starting to see these videos where it's like, I was gone for a week and let's unbox all the stuff I ordered. And it would be like two stories high of boxes. So he recently did a video where he came back from shopping at Miu Miu. He lives in New York.
Where they have a Miu Miu store, unlike Los Angeles.
Although thank you to everyone that sent us a Los Angeles Times article from 1999 that was like, you used to have a Miu Miu store.
We did. You know who has a Miu Miu store? Miami.
So, you know who probably has a Miu Miu store as well? Orange County. Like the Koresh store. He's very transparent. He bought $18,000 worth of clothes at Miu Miu. He's discussing the fact he bought a cardigan and he unzipped it and the zipper fell off. And he was like, I wasn't going to say anything, but he's like, then I started to unbutton this denim vest I got and the button fell off. This video got millions of views. Of course, it was on Miu Miu's radar. So they sent him replacement items. Like, good PR move, great. He then films himself unboxing the items again. And he goes, it's not going to happen again, but I'm filming it just in case it does. Chelsea, the zipper stayed on this time. The button fell off of the denim vest again. And I think there's no better example of the state of luxury fashion than this, which is everything is way more expensive and the quality is way worse.
Yeah, it's true. And now these motherfuckers have the audacity to sell us these jelly sandals. $500. The Row is making $800 flip-flops that are just foam.
Yeah, I mean, sneakers are $1,200.
No, it's disgusting. Sunglasses are $500. I hate these people. They're bastard people. As What's-His-Face said in Waiting for Guffman.
And yet, we'll keep buying.
No, it's one thing to invest in like a nice handbag or something, but I never buy anything full price. I'd rather buy luxury items from the past that were actually well made than deal with that shit.
Honestly, I would rather either buy vintage or support newer, younger designers, which is my way of segueing to New York Fashion Week.
So New York Fashion Week was last week. There were a handful of strong collections and a lot of really bad collections. But one thing I love about New York designers is that they are not above a runway gimmick. And every single year, there are certain designers that do something insane to draw attention to their brand. And this year, we got some real gems, starting with the fact that Andrew Cuomo modeled in the second annual Style Across the Aisle event, which was billed as a bipartisan fashion show. And I have to give them props for that name, because Style Across the Aisle is a great name for this.
It feels like an event that Sam Jones would have done the PR for.
Oh, for sure. And it was all for a good cause. It benefited an organization called Witness to Mass Incarceration, which is a nonprofit that supports formerly incarcerated people.
I mean, it does feel crazy that several mayoral candidates were walking in a fashion show.
Yeah. And David Paterson, who was the former governor of New York, also modeled in that show. But Andrew Cuomo really stole the spotlight with the way he was modeling the lining of the jacket that he was given.
I mean, I would say he shouldn't quit his day job, but I don't know if he should have either job. model nor mayor of New York.
Okay, but the question is, who should Zoran model for?
Who should Zoran Mondani model for? He's too classy for that. He's too smart. He wouldn't get sitting in the audience. I don't think he would model for anyone.
I definitely don't think he would model for anyone. But if he did, I do think he would kill it at Eckhaus Lotta or Loire. Like, it would have to be a small independent brand. He couldn't do a big corporate brand like Michael Kors or Ralph Lauren, even though that would be fab. And cool if brands like that would co-sign on him, but never going to happen.
I mean, do you think he was asked to walk in the second annual Style Across the Aisle event and he declined?
Probably. Hey, they said it was bipartisan, right? Speaking of other runway gimmicks, Susan Alexandra and Rachel Antonoff held another joint fashion show. They did this last season also that was basically a dog show where models walked down the runway with dogs that were available for adoption. It was very cute. And by models, I mean personalities.
Right. I mean, it's hard to wonder why designers like The Row have left New York to go to Paris with all of these gimmicks. But I will say that there were a couple of shows that did do a runway gimmick that reminded me more of Imitation of Christ. Like, it was more performance art than runway gimmick.
Performance art sponsored by Milkbone. Milkbone sponsored this show, and that is the funniest corporate sponsor in history.
Another runway gimmick that has confounded me was the Raising Cane's fashion show, which happened at the Standard High Line. I'll put fashion show in quotes.
Well, it's a fashion show to raise awareness about eating chicken tenders, which I support, of course.
And there are many looks inspired by the chicken chain. It was designed by a man named Joe Ando Hirsch. A quick Google search tells me that he's a Japanese-American fashion designer, actor, and Chelsea, can you believe it? Content creator who rose to fame on TikTok. And I guess he's known for his viral catchphrase, "Can I make you a dress?" And this man made many dresses that look like chicken fingers.
Yes, this collection included a beaded velvet gown that Raising Cane's described as evoking, quote unquote, the look and feel of a chicken finger being dipped into cane sauce. It's so funny. And this is why the fashion industry deserves its own satirical comedy series like The Studio, because you can't make this shit up. But what I will say is there needed to be more chicken fingers on the runway. Like, I want the model to come down with a platter of chicken fingers and then just toss them into the audience.
This sounds like a fantasy of yours, because it feels like you want to be in the audience catching the chicken fingers to then eat them.
I am not above that. One gimmick that I really liked, I don't even know if it was a gimmick. It was maybe a gimmick in the format of the fashion show, but from a design standpoint, I thought it was really brilliant, which was the Colleen Estrada show, where for every look, there were two models, and they showed the same exact garment or garments in full color and in black. And I don't know if anyone has attempted this before, but I thought it was so genius because it really shows you what color does and also what the absence of color does.
Right. And it was, you know, this idea of twin flame, or, you know, you and your shadow.
Yeah. And for me, Colleen Estrada, the color palette is too wild for me personally. So I enjoyed seeing the clothes in black because that's closer to something that I could actually buy or would wear. But I feel like this is also useful from the standpoint of the buyers.
So it's sort of Colleen Estrada night mode and day mode. When we're talking about runway gimmicks, I really do think it does reveal the state of American fashion right now, where, I mean, we're saying runway gimmick, but basically a lot of these shows were SponCon, and I think most brilliantly done by Tanner Fletcher.
Yes. Their show was sponsored by Etsy. Respect. As two people that have also done Spawn for Etsy, a company that I genuinely loved, I thought this was a genius gimmick because the models came out of the back of a moving truck and they were all holding different homewares from Etsy, and they slowly like decorated the room that they were in or the space that the fashion show was held in.
That especially felt like an old school Imitation of Christ show.
Oh, for sure. And they also did a collaboration, like they made like I think, 5 different products in collaboration with different Etsy sellers as well.
Which are available to purchase now.
Yeah, I thought it was really, really smart in the scheme of Spawn, like as well executed as you can do.
Well, because it's genuine Spawn. Like, they're not only shilling for Etsy, which probably, you know, underwrote a good portion of their runway show, how they were able to do a runway show at New York Fashion Week, probably, but then co-designing actual objects that you could purchase in the moment, I also think is great.
Good for them. In other New York Fashion Week news, Gwyneth Paltrow has a new line called Gwen, spelled G-W-Y-N. Great name. I mean, to think that that's what Goop could have been called.
I mean, it's the first part of her name.
The first part of her name. But it is replacing G-Label, which is Goop's previous fashion line, which is great. Although I feel like this should be explained to the consumer more explicitly, like a bit of a digression. But did you ever go to Moby's tea shop in the Lower East Side?
Why, yes, Chelsea, I did.
Do you remember there was a giant framed poster in there that was like from, like, it was promoting a New Order concert and it just said New Order were Joy Division? I feel like similarly, we need something for Gwen that's like, Gwen was G-Label.
I mean, do we? Because I'm very confused about this rebrand because it looks exactly like her previous clothing line, just with a new name.
Well, it's better branding. The branding is better, but yes, I agree. The clothes look identical. It's maybe, it's a little more high fashion. Guinevere Vancinas, who I absolutely adore, was the model in the lookbook. And there's a look where she's wearing like a white men's shirt and a straight tie and a pair of trousers that feels a bit more Saint Laurent high fashion than the sort of like woman at Brentwood Country Mart vibe that G-Label has been serving.
Sure. I mean,
but it's not fashion enough to make it different enough.
There are things that I will just call a very Gwyneth Paltrow silhouette. Like, there's one skirt. It's a mid-calf skirt that looks like a pair of pants on top and then is a pleated skirt at the bottom. And that feels very Gwyneth Paltrow. I don't know who else but her would look good in that.
I'm sure there's someone. But I would really like to see, not that I want another one of these brands, but I would like to see her do something a little more interesting to necessitate a full rebrand like this.
The new design director is a woman named Sophia Manassi, who was formerly at The Row and Margiela.
How many former Row employees are there?
They're endless.
Like, pretty soon it's going to be like, we've hired someone that interned at The Row for 3 months, simply because everyone else has been poached by a bigger brand.
Before we move on, I discovered something truly shocking, Chelsea. Did you know that our beloved Goop Kitchen is a licensing deal?
No. Wait, what do you mean?
Meaning that Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop brand licensed the name Goop. She has nothing to do with it other than promotion and licensing the Goop name.
Wait, she had nothing to do with the creation of the recipes at Goop Kitchen as a successful cookbook author herself?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, this was evidently revealed in the Amy Odell Gwyneth book that we need to read.
Well, you know what? At least they created something of quality. The fact that we would never know that Gwyneth Paltrow wasn't personally doing all these recipe tastings, I think, is a testament to what they did. So good on them.
Although we should have known, because the lack of brick and mortar locations and the fact that Goop Kitchens are exclusively ghost kitchens, which, by the way, we're down the block from a Goop Kitchen ghost kitchen.
I never want to be that far away from a Goop Kitchen ghost kitchen, personally.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
All right.
Shall we talk about maybe the worst show of New York Fashion Week?
It wasn't the Cane's Chicken Show?
Raising Cane's. No, that was finger-licking good, Chell.
I think you're mixing your chicken shops up.
And yet Chicken Shop Girl didn't model in the Raising Cane's Fashion Show. Lost opportunity.
Are you talking about Calvin Klein?
I am.
I didn't think it was the worst, but it did nothing for me. And it was Veronica Leoni's second collection for the brand. Broadly speaking, I do think that we should give designers time to settle into a new job and reshape the brand. But there's nothing about this show that feels authoritative to me, because I've seen so many of these ideas from other designers over the course of the past, like, 5-10 years, the combination of the kerchiefs and the mini dresses, that reminded me of Marc Jacobs. The pom-poms, that reminded me of Bottega, but also what Raph was doing at Calvin.
The bathrobes as dresses felt like Balenciaga. The crinkly dresses felt very Prada-y.
Yeah, the using the Calvin Klein waistband also felt very Balenciaga. And the keys hanging off of pants and handbags. We've seen that from Willy Chavarria. We've also seen that from Balenciaga. It's like everything there I have seen.
Those weird see-through Calvin Klein long john tights, that was all their own. I'll give them that. I'm not sure what that was, but at least that was original.
Look, I will say I liked the apron dresses. I thought that they were really chic. And I love the branding, which MM Paris did, and I think is completely correct for Calvin Klein in the year of our Lord 2025. But I don't know, it's just, it's sad when this should be the biggest show in New York, but it feels like a lot of these younger designers that are influenced by Calvin Klein are like beating them at their own game, like the Form Show specifically. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. It's two Fs, O-R-M-E. And that to me felt way more Calvin.
Yeah, I mean, not to get into nerd shit, but there was that anime film Ghost in the Shell, 80s or 90s, and so many movies ripped that anime off, specifically The Matrix, that when they then made a live action version of Ghost in the Shell, everyone was like, we've seen this before, we've seen it in The Matrix. And it's like, no, The Matrix was ripping that off. That's what this Calvin Klein thing feels like, is like they were the Rosetta Stone of American minimalist style. Everyone is just doing it better than them.
And now they're doing just anything that they think could be popular based on things that other designers have done recently.
Yeah, the collection, maybe not the worst collection of New York Fashion Week. It certainly was the most incoherent.
Yeah, I wouldn't be so harsh about it, but again, just given the resources that Calvin Klein has and what a big brand it is and how important it is to the New York fashion industry, it's just disappointing to me. Also, I said this to you, but Rachel Tashjian wrote an excellent article for the Washington Post this week called When Did Fashion Week Get So Boring? I will link to it in the show notes. And she makes a very valid point, which is that so many American fashion designers are pandering to a very specific kind of woman, a wealthy woman that loves Carolyn Bessette and Tina Chow, and she's shopping at The Row and La Mer and Totem, and she's getting into ceramics. And Rachel's being like, but wait, actually, how many women in the world are actually like this? I only know two of them, and one of them is literally Amanda Brooks, who was name-checked in this article.
Yeah, at this point, it does seem like there are more designers and labels than shoppers, potentially, for any of this kind of clothing.
Yeah, it just is starting to feel really boring. And of course, like, those women look great. Fashion that looks like this looks great. But surely someone has another idea. Even Phoebe Philo, who's been so instrumental to this look, actually makes clothes that are a lot more interesting and subversive and cheeky and funny. And
I think this goes hand in hand with the Wisdom K thing with the Miu Miu, where everything's breaking as soon as he buys it. Because I believe Rachel makes the point that not only do you have so many high fashion labels designing stuff like this, then you have Koss and Zara also designing stuff like this. And as we've noted, if the luxury product is the same quality as a Zara level, then why buy the luxury brand?
Yeah.
Especially because a majority of these women, we, you know, we've talked about the roification of certain celebrities' style personalities. Like, it's all ephemeral. Like, most of these women will cycle into and trend into whatever the next style persona that is hip in a couple of years.
Yeah, I feel like the only women who are actually like this, like celebrities, like it is Uma Thurman, who's consistently been that bitch, at least on the red carpet. I don't know how she dresses day to day.
The other thing I enjoyed about this article, which is quite gossipy, is the fact that Rachel talks about how she was not invited to the Kate show this season because she gave them a bad review the previous season. Or at least that's why she believes she wasn't invited to the fashion show.
Well, designers do that, you know? They often retaliate against journalists, which sucks because I feel like people should be able to take it, you know? And Kate has made really beautiful clothes, but I don't know. This last collection, there was a lot of looks that I was like, did you need to do that? Who wants to look like that? Who is that for? Like,
you're like, this fashion show could have used.
This is what Kate needs is a platter of Raising Cane's chicken tenders.
It's Raising Cane's?
I want to see Kate Holstein make a dress that evokes the sensation of a chicken finger being dipped into cane sauce.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Other fashion shows. As much as we talk shit about New York Fashion Week, I think it's not because we're haters. I think it's maybe because we grew up in a time when it was a bit more relevant, but which is not to say that there aren't amazing people doing amazing collections. One collection I really, really loved this season was the Lee collection. I hope that's how it's pronounced. It's the brand is spelled L-I-I. It's designed by a guy named Zane Lee, who recently graduated from FIT. And he's released 4 lookbooks in the past. You can look at them on Vogue Runway. This is his first runway show. And I thought it was so sporty and chic and like the right amount of avant-garde. Like, he's deconstructing a parka and turning it into a cocktail dress, but it's not so conceptual that it's unwearable.
Right. And a lot of interesting layering as well, which feels like a comment on the current over minimalization of American style.
Yeah, I really liked the first few looks. I'm not sure if it was like one garment made to look like several garments that were layered or if it was just styling, but it looked really amazing. And the collection before this, which I didn't see, I only just looked at the lookbook, was so good. It was like a lot of just amazing faux fur pieces. And he has a website. You can buy the clothes and it's not crazy. It's like you could buy a dress for $600 or just an incredible, like the most expensive, like Prada looking, Dries looking skirt for $500, which I get is a lot of money, but in the scheme of luxury fashion is at least attempting to appeal to a slightly more frugal consumer, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not Kate money.
Yeah, it's not $1,600 for a kitten heel Chelsea boot or something.
Yeah, I think he's really talented. And I think this is an encouraging thing for New York Fashion Week.
Well, it also feels like how actual New Yorkers dress. Like, I felt the same way when I saw the Eckhouse Lotta and the Rachel Comey show as well. Like, they felt of the moment, not this idealized idea of some Tribeca Pilates mom.
Yeah, Eckhouse Lotta, they're consistently great, but I feel like there was a real ease and elegance to the show that it reminds me of Helmut Lang. And I feel like the jeans, the little black dresses, these are things that could appeal to the Kate Rowe person. But then there's also stuff that appeals to the sort of downtown New York, like young person that wants to wear something that's a little more subversive. And I'm also happy that they're getting into handbags in a real way now, which feels long overdue for them. And yeah, Rachel Comey, again, we have to salute these independently owned brands that have had real longevity in the New York fashion industry. And Rachel Comey also, I loved that the models did their own hair and makeup. Like, they cast people that looked really fab. Like, no one looked like... It wasn't one of those shows where it's like, it's all real people, but everyone like kind of looks like shit. It's like, they all look amazing. They all just look like, you know, when you're walking around New York and you're in Tribeca and you look over and there's some like woman of a certain age with just the perfect haircut and the perfect blazer, the perfect handbag. And you're just like, holy fuck, you know?
I didn't know how to take that. I read that in the Vogue runway review of the Rachel Comey show. And like, yes, you can take it in the way you're taking it of like, thank God, none of this pomp and circumstance. Or you could take it as putting on a fashion show is really expensive and like, how do we maybe cut corners? Because coming from like the filmmaking world, it feels like being on an indie film and it's like, hey, could you come like hair and makeup ready?
For sure. But to be fair, everyone that was cast in the show did tasteful hair and makeup. Like, no one was trying to give themselves like a Jeffree Star beat before modeling in this show. You know what I mean?
But I would have loved to have seen it.
Yeah.
Rachel Scott made her debut at Parenza Schooler.
Kind of.
I don't really care to talk about the collection. I more wanted to talk about this tidbit. Again, I read in Vogue Runway, which was she was named the creative director last week, the week before the collection debuted. So it's really hard to say how much of a hand she had in designing the collection.
Yeah, Rachel Scott has a line called Diotima. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, that they've released several lookbooks. This season was actually their first runway presentation, which was quite beautiful, I thought. But she's known for crochet pieces and knits and slinky, sexy clothes.
And I suppose you saw that influence in the Parenza collection. Like, if Parenza before was giving Soho, this is giving more like Bushwick or Ridgewood.
I think it was really like Dreezy, a lot of their Parenza show, more so than usual. Like some, and I really liked a lot of the prints. There was this digital floral print of distorted floral print that appeared on several pieces that I thought was gorgeous. But sure, why not? I'm excited to see what happens when she takes full control, because it's kind of hard to understand who did what with this particular show.
Absolutely. What else?
I don't know if we've ever talked about her before, but I really, really like Sandy Liang.
I love Sandy Liang as well. I'm not a Sandy Liang girly.
You should be, though, because I feel like you have the like body for it. Oh. Like, you could wear like a little satin mini skirt and a matching boxy satin jacket. You know what I mean?
Oh, thank you. I mean, this collection was very fun. It felt like Romy and Michelle would have designed for their store.
Oh, for sure. There's so many disparate influences in the show. There's stuff that felt very Comb. There's stuff that felt like 80s on Garo. There was a Wizard of Oz reference, certainly, or at least I don't think white and blue gingham can really connote anything other than Dorothy at this point.
Right, right.
And it was also giving like Sanrio. You know, there's all of these like cartoon cat prints that looked Japanese.
Per our previous conversation about just how every label kind of looks like every other label, I do find myself being pulled more towards the surreal and irreverent, like a Vaquera and like Sandy Liang. Like, towards the end of the show, there was this mini dress that was just like a white, looked like a white shirt dress, but then it had frilly underwear attached all over it, as if you had like pulled it out of the dryer and the underwear got stuck due to static cling or something.
Yeah, that felt very Comb and Vaquera, certainly. But I don't know, I feel like she's someone that has built a real cult following. She has a very cute store in Dime Square area. I think the accessories are really good. And like I said, I think there's an audience for this. And I think there's people that want to dress like this. And I really like what she does. Although I feel like I've aged out of most of it. Maybe I could get one of those little mini duffel handbags or like one of the maxi dresses that, you know, looks kind of vaguely like, again, Laura Ashley meets Sanrio or something. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what actually makes it into the stores.
I also think something that she does very smartly, speaking to what we were talking about last week of like how I miss diffusion lines, or at least what Marc Jacobs was doing in the 2000s. Like, she does offer products at every price point. You know, if you can't afford a $600 polar fleece jumper, there's a phone case or a key charm or
a baby tee or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, speaking of girly designers, can we talk about Love Shack Fancy?
Not a brand I thought we would ever discuss on the podcast, but okay.
No, but I feel like it's time because it actually is quite a successful brand. They have a store here in LA. To me, I mean, this is like clothing for women who use the hashtag rosé all day and have gender reveal parties. Like, it makes me phobic of like a certain genre of heterosexual woman to even look at this.
It does feel like, and I don't know the history of this brand, but it does look like an American woman saw Australian fashion and was like, I get it.
Yeah, it's touching upon like these clothes have like a Western quality that's kind of very, you know, Ralph Lauren-y, but also, yes, this kind of romanticism that I associate with Zimmermann, which is an Australian brand, and Chloe, although I think those brands are doing it in a much more tasteful way. This is the sort of thing that you might see like Britney Spears wearing one of these in like one of her videos, you know, which would honestly make it look cooler.
Britney Spears dancing in the bathroom of a restaurant in Love Shack Fancy.
It's the name also. How do you arrive at that?
Oh, I'm sure she's done many articles.
And we haven't bothered to do the research, so.
It's all one word too, and Love, Shack, and Fancy are capitalized, but it's all one word.
It's really, really bad. And I honestly feel bad for anyone that had to like go to the show or report on it or, you know, think about it. Or it's like the fashion equivalent of, I'm sorry to go on and on, but like these cheesy restaurants in LA, the ones that Chloe 70 hates that have like roses, fake roses and bougainvillea and stuff like on the facade.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I believe Love Shack Fancy is on the same block that a lot of those types of restaurants are, which is Melrose Place.
Yeah, it's Melrose Place.
Couldn't have a Miu Miu. Used to have a Miu Miu on Melrose.
No, all we get is Love Shack Fancy. Fuck my life.
This is like when the New World Order takes over and we all are made into Stepford Wives, we will be dressed in Love Shack Fancy.
Well, to be fair, on Melrose Place, the Chloe store and the Zimmermann store are both on that block, and Love Shack Fancy. So when you can't afford Chloe or it's still expensive.
It's
significantly less expensive than Chloe. It is less expensive than Zimmermann, certainly. Zimmermann, you go into Zimmermann, it's like the dress is like $1,500 and you're like, what?
I thought you were going to say because they're all on the same block if there's like a turf war, if it's like the Sharks and the Jets.
Since we're talking about girly designers, I feel like we should also acknowledge Anna Sui, a longtime devotee of the baby doll look. See, this is someone that does boho in a way that doesn't shock or horrify me. It's not clothes that I would personally wear, but I respect this woman's consistency and her razor sharp understanding of what she does, who she is as a designer, and who she's designing for.
Absolutely. I don't think I've ever met an Anna Sui girl, but I'm glad it exists.
I bought your son an Anna Sui something from an Essence sale. I don't remember what.
Is it the little furry shorts?
Sounds like could be that. I don't know. Anyway, speaking of which, there's also a new Anna Sui book that just came out that is solely focused on her work in the 90s. I think it's called Anna Sui, the 90s, which is a genre of book that is happening now. Like, there's a Pamela Hansen 90s book that just came out. We're all about the 90s, but I can't wait to get this book. It has Sofia Coppola and Zoe Cassavetes on the cover. And, you know, I already have a couple of Anna Sui books, so what's one more? I'm ready. Is that it for New York Fashion Week?
I think so. Do we want to get into the other coffee table book we're probably going to buy, which is Sofia Coppola's Chanel Haute Couture book?
Yes, I did buy it. It has come out. It has not come to my house yet. I've not received it yet.
You didn't send it to my house?
I didn't send it to your house because Guys, I send a lot of packages to Lauren's house just because if it's something with an indeterminate shipping timeline, especially if it's like something from an eBay seller, I'm like, I can't guarantee where I'm going to be in 3 weeks. If I know I'm going to be home for a couple of weeks, I'll of course send everything to my house. But if it's a little iffy, if it's a small business, I just get it sent to Lauren's because I don't want things getting lost or stolen or whatever.
One time, a couple weeks ago, because I was still getting a lot of presents for the baby, and I was like, ooh, what's this? And then Paul just heard me go, oh, god damn it. And he was like, what? I was like, another package for Chelsea. But you know what? I get the contact high of opening the box without the financial ruin of buying all of these things.
Well, you should get the Sofia Coppola book, too. I obviously haven't physically seen it, but I've seen some photos of some of the contents online, and it looks extraordinary. And if Sofia Coppola continues with this publishing imprint that she has at Mac Books called Important Flowers, I think this is the third book that she's released, not including the planners, which I'm just not counting. But if this is something that she is going to continue to do for years of her life, I think these books are going to be a big part of her legacy.
Well, yeah. If no studio is going to fund her projects anymore... Like, remember she was supposed to do that Apple series with Florence Pugh that was based on an Edith Wharton novel or something?
Yeah, not to mention the dark and gritty live-action Little Mermaid.
Little Mermaid film that also got canceled, yeah. This is a good avenue for her.
I think so, too. I think she was at the Anna Sui show, actually. I think her and Marc Jacobs came together. They've been friends for 10,000 years. Also, another slight digression. I keep forgetting to buy the Anna Sui Barbie. That's what I may get sent to your house soon, because one just came out.
Wow.
Because they have this series of collector's Barbies that's like important women in history.
And Anna Sui made the list.
Anna Sui made the list. And it's making me think, we need a Sofia Coppola Barbie. Oh. Can you imagine?
Can we also add that I'm pretty sure that you send a certain amount of things to my house so that you can launder your doll habits or your wife doesn't know about it? Because I seem to remember that the Clueless dolls were sent to my house. They will be put in the studio. But Tad was very mad about it. She was like, not more dolls. And you were like, no, it's for the studio. It's totally different. But they're still all at your house right now.
I know. You know, I forgot to mention when we were talking about Sandy Liang, I read in the show notes that like an inspiration for her collection was this eccentric heiress named Huguette Clark, who I'm completely unfamiliar with. Need to find a biography of this crazy bitch, because apparently she was like some mentally unstable heiress who spent like millions of dollars on dollhouses and like doll shit and had all these mansions, but just like voluntarily chose to live in hospitals, not even psychiatric hospitals, just like she went into like a hospital to get something like, you know, like a cancerous lesion taken off her face, and she like never left.
Speaking of Coppolas and dolls, wasn't Gia Coppola supposed to direct the Lonely Doll film?
No, that was Julian Schnabel.
No, this is...
Really? This is an update on the...
Well, I mean...
long gestating Dare Wright biopic that truly my sanity depends on this movie being made someday.
I mean, back in 2016, yeah, Naomi Watts and Jessica Lange were going to be in a film about a film called The Secret Life of the Lonely Doll, which I imagine discussed the author Dare Wright and her weird relationship with her mom.
And her incredibly depressing, fucked up life.
So that also got taken away from us. The wrong people have money, Chelsea.
It's so true. Also, this isn't New York Fashion Week related, but I just want to note that Poochie just dropped a lookbook for their spring collection on Vogue Runway. They've been alternating between lookbooks and having actual fashion shows. I just think that Camille Michelli, who is the new-ish creative director, is so fab, so chic, and truly killing it. I also went into the store in Miami this week. It's one of the few places in this country where there is a Poochie store.
For those that don't know, because I feel like we didn't know until we visited Miami in 2023, or I will say at least I did not know. Miami has us beat in shopping because literally there is something called the Miami Design District where it is every single designer store you can think of. And then like a couple blocks beyond that is every furniture store you could think of.
You know who also has a store there? Our corporate sponsor, The RealReal. But truly going into that store, is incredible because she's so smart in the sense that it's like she is just using the original Emilio Pucci prints and recoloring them from season to season. She's not trying to modernize it. Like, she's not trying to do weird digital Pucci prints, subverting the Pucci print, which some of the past creative directors have done and have, you know, made it like really shitty and bad. It's like she's taking these classic prints and then just putting them on the simplest, the chicest, most elegant clothes, like the caftans. It was just, ugh. That's truly it for me. Like, if there was one brand, if I had to pick a brand, if I won the Powerball, I'm going to Pucci first.
You're buying everything in Pucci.
No question. Also, in the design district, I smelled all of the new Balenciaga fragrances. I forget how many there are. It's like 10 or 12 or something like that. They haven't introduced or they haven't reintroduced fragrances since Demna got appointed. So I was expecting that at some point we would get some sort of CK1 equivalent, like abrasive, disgusting smelling unisex fragrance in like a nasty steel bottle or something. But no, they went much more traditional with these fragrances.
Yeah, if I had to guess what the Balenciaga signature fragrance, certainly under Demna, would be, it would be something that smells like trash.
But it was actually like, it was weird. It was like either the scents were, and to be fair, it's hard to smell 10 perfumes at one time. At a certain point, they all become kind of disgusting.
By the way, I'm imagining you just going down a line sniffing every perfume.
No, I did. Well, it was worse because it's like, it was an empty store. So someone like had to come and like handle us. So we were like, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to smell all of them. You have to spray them all on these little cards just so we know what's here. Yeah, it's like some of them were too trad and old lady, whereas others were too like a little too conceptual for me.
Interesting.
Like they sprayed one on me that I thought it kind of, I was like, oh, this is kind of nice and floral. And they were like, so this is made of seaweed. And then it sort of dried down to this weird, like, musky thing. I was like, I can't do this. Although Tat got a good fragrance from them, which was, it's called 100%, which I think is the best one, which also reminds me of the Sonic Youth song.
And this smells like what? Rhubarb and tires?
I don't know what the notes of that one are, but it's for a very specific person. I think the incense one is also, would be good on, like, a man, you know? On a Ted Danson or a Tom Selleck or a Christopher Maloney, perhaps.
Less so Christopher Maloney or Tom Selleck, but like there's a real chance you could run into Ted Danson in Los Angeles.
I have seen him. I'm telling you, I saw him at like the Women's March like ages ago.
We were there together.
Was that a different year? Yeah. Okay. We were there. Okay. Well, then you forgot that Ted Danson was there. And so was Mary Steenburgen. And we saw them.
Wow.
Anywho, are we done for the day?
Well, I sure hope so.
Or has the federal government already censored us?
I mean, we're low on the totem pole, but like, again.
Thank God.
It's not.
What a great time to be a bottom feeder.
It's not out of the realm of possibility. I'd be a little more concerned if I was, I don't know, a left-wing Twitch streamer, let's say.
True.
But we'll continue talking our fashion bullshit until we're not allowed to anymore.
Exactly. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.